something?
No, I see the reply. So I was saying we don't see you, but it's fine now that the reply is.
You don't see?
You.
Oh, okay. I'm too bright. Okay.
No, you're not that cold.
Okay. I can't sit there because of, I don't want to obscure the thing. Good afternoon. Welcome, Minister, DG, and the department here. Maybe we haven't seen each other for a long time, but I think we all know one another. Unless there are new people, DG, that we don't know here, that you would like to introduce. Otherwise, we would just shoot straight to the work of the day, if they aren't. DG?
Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Minister. We have here the team from the Department of Health that deals specifically with the child health, led by the DPG, Dr. Jürgen Pile. Dr. Jürgen Pile is the Deputy Director General of HIV, TB, Maternal and Child Health, and he's here with our two pediatricians. And I'm going to ask him to introduce the team. One is the chief director and one is our expert.
Thank you, DG, and honorable members. Good afternoon. On my right is Dr. Nontlantla Dlamini. She is the chief director for Child, Youth Health and School Health Services. And on her right is Dr. Leslie Bamford, who is the pediatrician in the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The subject today is briefing on child mortality in South Africa by the Department of Health. And I know that the minister has got a serious passion on this one. And I believe that what you have been hearing about us doing very good will be today ratified. I will now take this opportunity to give to the minister, and he will share with his department. Thank you, Minister. Your time.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for this opportunity to present to you about a topic which is not only important for the country, but it's important globally, the issue of child mortality. I think we will start with definitions, because sometimes they do confuse people, and they use them interchangeably. When we talk about neonatal mortality, right, we are talking about deaths that occur in the first 28 days of life, because a neonate is any human being in their first 28 days of life. Infant mortality, we are talking about 1 year, because an infant is any human being from 0 to 12 months. Under 5 mortality, as it explains, is any death that occurs in the first 5 years of life. So here you are talking about child mortality, meaning we are talking about people who die before their 5th birthday. That is what we are talking about. Now, this issue has got a global, it's an issue that has kept global concern. Because if you remember, in the year 2000, the United Nations adopted what we now commonly call MDGs, the 8 Millennium Development Goals. You remember that one of them, called Millennium Development Goal number 4, is that countries were supposed to reduce child mortality rate by 2/3 by the year 2015. You are aware that 2015 is 2 years time. We're given 15 years by United Nations to reduce the number of children who die before their 5th birthday. Reduce it by 2/3. We're supposed to, the baseline for these 2/3 is 1990. That means every country in the world is supposed to check how many children were dying before their 5th birthday in 1990. and make sure that by 2015, two-thirds of that number has been decreased. But unfortunately, in sub-Saharan Africa, the rates remain very high. In some instances, even higher than the 1990 figures. For the same reason that in 1990, the baseline, which was chosen for 1990, that is the time when HIV/AIDS started spiraling out of control in sub-Saharan Africa. And that spiraling out of control of HIV caused two problems in sub-Saharan Africa, maternal mortality and child mortality. That means many women started dying in pregnancy and childbirth more than ever before. In South Africa, it's put at 49%. That means 49% of women who die because of pregnancy and childbirth is because of HIV and AIDS. And 35% of children who die before their fifth birthday is also because of HIV and AIDS. So this pandemic actually disturbed the plan to try and bring this thing under control. But in South Africa, as you know, the rate started to decrease when we scaled down our HIV/AIDS programs. You'll remember that by the end of last year of 2012, reports started coming out from UNAIDS, UNICEF, Medical Research Council, The Lancet, all the researchers around the world started praising South Africa for bringing down the rate of HIV infection. And when that rate of HIV infection started getting put under control, if you remember, mother-to-child transmission reduced from 8% in 2008, it went down to 3.5% in 2010 and down to 2.7% in 2011. That helped a lot to reduce the number of children who were dying. Why did it help? Because there were about 70,000 children who were born HIV positive in South Africa before you brought that figure down. And any child who's born HIV positive, the chances of dying in the first 6 months increases by 1,500%. That means the chance of dying is 15 times more than a child that is born normal. It increased by 1,500%, and obviously it will shoot up your mortality rate. But also, apart from the United Nations, African Union also, for the simple reason that it explained, that the problem spirals out of control in sub-Saharan Africa. So African Union came up with a program called CARMA in 2010. CARMA means Campaign on Reduction, on Accelerated Reduction of Maternal and Child Mortality in Africa. African Union, this meeting where this decision was taken, was not attended by ministers of health. It was attended by heads of state. I was there accompanying the president. They are the ones who this topic was put in front of them, that as heads of state, are you in Africa, are you going to allow maternal mortality and child mortality to keep on spiraling out of control? So this campaign called CARMA was launched. And in South Africa, we realized that dealing with especially the MDGs after the year 2000 cannot be dealt with anecdotally. In other words, we couldn't just anecdotally say, we know the child mortality rate has spun out of control, etc. We actually wanted empirical evidence together with scientific solutions. So what happened is that three ministerial committees were appointed. The first one called Ministerial Committee on Confidential Inquiries into Maternal Mortality. It was appointed as far back as 1996. The second one, National Committee of Perinatal Mortality, in 2007, and the last one, National Committee on Child Mortality. When I was giving definitions, I did not include perinatal. I'm sure I'll confuse you further. I put only three definitions. Perinatal means the period around pregnancy and childbirth, and is usually measured from 22 weeks of pregnancy, during birth, after birth, up to the 28 weeks. So it includes neonate, it will include neonate up to 28 days, not weeks. So we have got these three committees. They report triennially. What do these committees do? Every 3 years, as I said, triennially. They actually go to hospitals, both public and private, not only public hospitals, even private hospitals. They collect the files of all the women who died within that period and the children. They study the files to see the trends so that they will be able to pick up generally in the country. Where lies the highest number of these deaths in both public and private? What strategies do we then put? Because if we don't know, we won't be able to put appropriate strategies. So that's what this committee does triennially. But committees are called confidential inquiry because it's not an investigation. It's just to find out, to understand your country. You are not investigating and saying, no, this is what happened. You are just saying, when we check, there are 1,000 children who died in that period. 900 of them, we think this was the cost, and if the country must reduce it, this is what they must do. So we are just giving the figures between 2009 and 2011. As you know, within that period, the mortality started coming down. You can see there where we were in 2009 in terms of under 5 mortality, 2010, then 2011. Where we were in terms of infant mortality in 2009, the one that is remaining static, 14, then 13, then 14, is during the neonatal period, meaning then that in South Africa, this is where we must put our concentration, during the neonatal period. Because many things can go wrong during that period, during the first 28 days of life. When do children die? 30% of these deaths occur in the newborn period. 40 of them occur in the children between 1 month and 1 year of age. And 30% occur between 1 and 5 years. So they are more or less divided like that. And then, why do children die? The majority of child deaths result from the following 5 conditions. That means in the triennial report, the following 5 conditions were found to be featuring most of the time, if not all of the time. Firstly, as I told you, is the virus, the pandemic, the HIV/AIDS infection features a lot. Secondly, newborn conditions like prematurity, asphyxia, and infection. Then there is pneumonia and diarrhea. As you know, just to remind you, at some stage, diarrhea was regarded as the biggest killer of children in sub-Saharan Africa. Obviously, this is because of things like public health. If you don't have clean running water, if you don't have electricity, if you stay in an informal settlement, all those things will make diarrhea the biggest killer. But now I'm sure you are aware, which will come later. For the first time in history, we now have a vaccine against pneumonia and diarrhea. They were never there before. Doctor, can you help me? How long did we start having this pneumococcus and rotavirus? No, in South Africa we started in 2008. Yes, so these are relatively new. When children went to clinics to get vaccines for polio, measles, etc., we never used to have this until 2008. These two have just been implemented. And we are hoping, because science are already there, that if we are able to do this on a widespread scale within the country, we will markedly reduce the number of child deaths. And of course, there is TB. You are aware that the world used to believe that we have lost the battle against TB. That we have won the battle against TB. We used to believe so. But now we know better. That TB has come back with a vengeance, carried on the back of HIV and AIDS. When HIV and AIDS started biting, it brought back TB, and we are in crisis. And TB among children is specifically very problematic. It's not very easy because it's not easy to diagnose. like in adults. As we know, we usually diagnose TB through sputum. You cough and produce a sputum in babies and children. How do you get that? So it's a very big challenge which we are still faced with. And then malnutrition. After these five conditions, we have got malnutrition, predominantly mild and moderate. It's a very important contributor to death. As you can see, most of these causes are actually socioeconomic. Malnutrition clearly is, but all these others are socioeconomic conditions, meaning that it then means most of these deaths will be found in poorer areas of the world, poorer areas of the continent, and poorer areas of our country. You are likely to find it in rural areas and informal settlements than you do in urban areas and areas that are well-to-do. Now, what's our response as a department? What's our response to the things I've shown you? Firstly, we have signed what is called negotiated service delivery agreement with the president that there need to be certain outcomes to the healthcare system in South Africa. If I may mention them, they are not there. I only put strategic output two. The first one is that we need to increase life expectancy in South Africa. You have heard to us last year that we indeed are doing so. The second one is this, number two, reduce maternal and child mortality. The third one is to deal with the scourge of HIV, AIDS, and TB. And the fourth is to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the healthcare system. These are the outputs that I expected, on which I am supposed to report every quarter to the cabinet. And I think there was a report this morning to the cabinet committee, which the deputy minister was giving to the cabinet committee. She was reporting on progress on this four. But number two is to reduce maternal and child mortality. Now, we also have a maternal newborn child and women's health and nutrition strategy 2012 to 2016, which was launched in May last year, which outlines packages of priority services to be delivered to all women and children, key strategies for improved service outcomes. But I've already told you about KAMA, which was launched in May 2012. It also identified priority activities to address maternal and child survival. But we are also having PAC engineering. If you look at the green paper on NHI, we clearly said the healthcare system in South Africa, the core of the healthcare system in South Africa must be primary healthcare engineering. It simply means you move away from a curative healthcare system. You put the emphasis on a preventative healthcare system. That means prevent diseases from happening, promote health, which is what put Cuba at the top, despite being a very small country with problems. But when it comes to healthcare, Cuba is right at the top. It beats many rich countries because their healthcare system is based on primary healthcare, prevention and promotion. People believe primary healthcare is going to a clinic. We don't mean that. The clinic is just one step of primary health care, but it might be too late. Primary health care starts right inside the family, at home, in the village, within the community. How can you stop people from getting sick? Before they go to hospitals. The South African model is curative. It puts emphasis on hospitals, and everybody believes so. When we want to de-emphasize that, they usually believe we're running away. Stories that we see every day about what's happening in hospitals, they believe that is healthcare. That is not healthcare because health is not only inside the hospital. Actually, the World Organization produced a report in 2008 which shows three trends on which you won't have good outcomes if you practice those three trends in your country. One of them is called hospital centrism, meaning a healthcare system that is around the hospital. You won't get good outcomes no matter how much money you pump into the system, which is what is happening in South Africa now. You always complain that we pump a lot of money into health, but you don't get good health outcomes. It's because most of this money is pumped into hospital. It's not pumped into health care. And so in order to avoid that, in the NHI system, we are going to put primary health care, re-engineering. What do we do in primary health care? Let me not start in that. We start with school health. In other words, you argue, in South Africa, there are 12 million kids going to school. every day. Can you put up programs for them that prevent them from getting sick? Or are we all waiting for them to appear at one stage or the other in the hospital? Can we put up something at school that will reduce the level of illness? That's what school health means. Secondly, municipal health-based outreach, primary health care teams. South Africa is divided into 9 provinces, 52 districts, about 250 municipalities, 4,200 wards. Can you put primary health care, at least 10 of them, in each ward, in each of the 4,200 wards, so that they must know what's happening, even before it goes to hospital? They must know what's happening in each and every household. They must know who has got HIV AIDS, who has got TB, which girl got, you know, teenage pregnancy, in which family are there lots of teenage pregnancies, who is hypertensive, who is diabetes, who has got cancer, etc., etc. That's the aim of these teams, and this is a key, by the way, for any country. If you look at the National Development Plan, they are advocating this very much, the plan for South Africa, Vision 2030. In fact, in the beginning, they were dreaming that we'll put up 1 million of these people. And yes, they were as enthusiastic as that, that will put 1 million. That figure is not reachable. Take into consideration that India, which is 30 times our population, has got only 800,000 of these people, not even a million. So we will start with 42,000 in the beginning. The last one, the district clinical specialist teams. If you look at these mortalities and you look at MDGs, the emphasis is on women and children. And that's where the problem is in sub-Saharan Africa. Much as we need specialists all over the country, everybody knows you don't find specialists in rural areas. Specialists are only found in towns mostly and big teaching hospitals. In the smaller hospitals, they hardly ever see a specialist. And it's a problem, because it will mean that people, especially women and children, they only come when they've already complicated. If they refer you to a specialist from a far rural area when you are pregnant, it means you're already in problems. Can we pick them up early? Now we decided we can't put specialists all over. It will be practically impossible. We simply don't have the resources, nor do we even have the people in the first place to do so. So we chose 7 key areas. We thought if in each district in the country, you can put the gynecologist because of the problem of maternal mortality. You can put the pediatrician for the same reason. You can put an anesthetist. You can put the family physician. Then you have solved broadly the problem that rural people experience. On the nursing side, if you put an advanced midwife, you put an advanced pediatric nurse, an advanced primary health care nurse. These 7, we call them clinical specialist teams. They form a team in each and every district. We started employing them last year. We are now at 46%. That means 46% of these positions all over South Africa have been filled. And in some cases, you'll find that they don't have the midwife, but they've got the gynecologist, in, you know. So we are still busy searching. Part of the reason that we still fill them at 46% is the shortage, especially of gynecologists. It's very, very acute, very clear shortage of such individuals. So it's not easy to get them. But this is the re-engineering of the primary health care. If it works very well in harmony, it will actually form the core of the healthcare system in South Africa. Anybody who escapes from this will be the one who lands up in hospital. At the moment, almost everybody just lands up in hospital with a flu, with a stroke, with cancer, with a brain tumor, with cardiac problem. Everybody is put in the same pot. With this model, only those who really need to be in hospital will be there. Now, come our priorities. This campaign on accelerated reduction of maternal and child mortality in Africa. The one I said was driven is African Union inspired. What is that which we are going to do to accelerate the reduction of mothers and children dying? One of the things you must do is contraception and family planning. I don't want you to undermine this thing, so I'll spend maybe some few minutes on it. Contraception and family planning is an extraordinarily important strategy, because some of these deaths that occur are mostly because family planning no longer exists in the way it used to in the past. And this is a problem of sub-Saharan Africa. We now have lots of teenage pregnancies, I'm sure you know that. We also have lots of teenage abortions. Many people in South Africa believe that teenage abortions are caused by the Termination of Pregnancy Act. In other words, they believe because we passed that act, that's why there are so many teenage abortions. I want to tell you that's not true at all. It's not true. The teenage abortions are not happening because there's an act. They are happening because there's no family planning and contraception. Why am I saying so? When the HIV AIDS started biting in sub-Saharan Africa, as you all know, we preached three things. We preached abstinence, we preached be faithful and condomize. And we thought when we do so, we throw out family planning out of the window. If you check some years back, those of you who are my age group, you'll remember that during our time, there used to be family planning clinics, there used to be family planning nurses, there used to be family planning campaigns, there used to be quotas all over, I'm sure you are aware. Nowadays, you don't see those, you see quotas, illegal ones for that matter, about quick abortion, fast abortion, cheap abortion. They say nothing about family planning. So if you take, somebody told me that if you take kids who were born after 1990 in South Africa, ask them two ways. Ask them the word family planning, ask them the word abortion. They'll recognize the word abortion immediately. The word family planning, they'll ask you, what's that? What do you mean? They've never heard about it. They don't know that something like that happens. That is the strategic blunder that's happening in sub-Saharan Africa. It's a blunder but not caused deliberately. People thought this abstaining, faithfulness and condomizing is going to happen. Yes, but unfortunately, even if it's happening, it doesn't mean that if you are faithful, you have to fall pregnant every time. Yes, because that's what it means. If you remain faithful but there's no contraception, it means every time you get engaged in the process, you fall pregnant. And in fact, the Committee on Maternal Mortality has shown us that some of the women who contribute to maternal mortality are married. They are married in a stable relationship, but they were not supposed to have fallen pregnant. They were not. Some of them were even told so. You deliver the baby, very difficult, and the doctor said, please don't try to fall pregnant. Leave the hospital, go to a rural area. There's no family planning. But you are married, you have got a husband, and you know you can't say no, you know. You can't, yes, because there are obligations there that you must. Yes. No, even now, man, there are obligations within marriage. So, yes, yes. So it's that's why it's a problem. Now, we are going to show you later. We believe this year we must relaunch a massive family planning campaign. Massive, on a massive scale, but under a new title, dual protection. That's what we are going to call it. Under a new title called dual protection, meaning South Africans have to know. Abstaining, being faithful and condomizing does not automatically mean they can't be family planning. Both of these can exist in one country and work very well for us. Early booking and improve the quality of antenatal care, I'm sure you understand that. Prevention of mother-to-child transmission, you will remember, as early as the 1st of December 2009, the president announced that women who are pregnant need to start this prevention of mother-child transmission of ARVs at 14 weeks. Our biggest challenge is to get women to come at 14 weeks. That's the biggest challenge we are faced with. That is why we believe this municipal hospital primary health care teams is extremely important, because the teams in each ward are likely to know which woman is pregnant and which woman is not going to the clinic, which woman has tested, because it depends on testing. But we depend very much on that. Obstetric ambulances, we already got a few of them around the country. Yeah. That means ambulances that specifically are for pregnant women and for nothing else. But sometimes provinces do misuse them. Like when there's an accident, they just send them. These obstetric ambulances, I can vote for the one I've seen because I haven't seen the others. The one I've seen at Osindisweni Hospital in KZN, that's where we launched our Karma. It actually have delivery facilities inside it. Meaning if the ambulance is called out to fetch a pregnant woman, if she delivers on the road, it can be handled in that ambulance. Because it's the facilities there are like in the labor ward. They can deliver a baby like they are sitting in the labor ward in these authentic ambulances. And we are trying to encourage provinces to acquire as many as possible. I don't know how many are there now, Jochen. Yes, at least a minimum of one in the district, but some provinces more. Maternity waiting homes, again, those who are my age group may remember. Sometimes when we go modern, we destroy things that work in nature. In the past, where I come from, in the rural area where I come from, it was common, and we're used to it, that any woman who's pregnant, towards pregnancy, must go to the hospital to wait there. There must be a hostel for them where they sit and wait. Yes, we grew up knowing that. But as we grew sophisticated, we thought, now this is old-fashioned. Like, we'll call an ambulance, we've got Mercedes-Benz around, we'll fly them. There are even helicopters. That's what we told ourselves. And we abolished maternity waiting homes. It's not working for us. As you know, it's not working for us. Some rural areas still don't have roads. Or they call an ambulance that will come after 5 hours, or the phone is not working, or, you know, there are many other problems. So maternal waiting homes, which we believe now every new hospital we build in South Africa must have them. That's our plan, in our new infrastructure plan. Wherever women who are identified to be at risk or staying very far from facilities must come there and wait. Again, the one I've seen where we launched Karma is in this way in hospital. The advantage of it also, maternal waiting homes, is that women don't just sit there. I'm inviting you to go to this institution. They are actually taught lots of things about pregnancy. They know exactly what will happen when the child is born. They are taught about breastfeeding, about how, you know, they are trained. Apart from the fact that they are also knitting and learning skills about knitting, there's a TV there with tapes and all that shows them all these problems that occur. So by some of them wait for 2 weeks. By the end of 2 weeks, they will be much better off than a woman who just goes to hospital and beg and all that. And we are advocating for that. Improving newborn care and treatment of sick children, including kangaroo mother care. Kangaroo mother care is exactly what that word describes. As we went more modern, we started putting up machines called incubators in which we put premature babies. We have now learned that there is no better incubator than the mother herself. Kangaroo mother care is where we get a special ward in the hospital. A special ward in that hospital. You can go to this institution again and keep on mentioning it because it has got all these features. And that's where we launch Karma. Where the mothers actually strap the children on their chest and lie on their bed, just like a kangaroo does. The temperature, the bonding, everything. It's much better than in a machine, and that's called kangaroo mother care. Expanded program on immunization, I think it's very clear. I've already mentioned pneumococcus and rotavirus. That imagine if every child in South Africa is immunized for those. Exclusive breastfeeding, again, allow me to, together with family planning, this has got a problem. Every time I mention it, people believe we're exaggerating. This is true. South Africa is regarded as a country with the lowest breastfeeding rate. Very, very low. Women in South Africa are not breastfeeding. It's a problem. Again, it can be traced back to the pandemic of HIV and AIDS. When the pandemic started biting, it told women, no, this child must not be breastfed because the mother is HIV positive. It is a big problem. That's why we had to call a special conference. Well, in 2011, we called a special breastfeeding summit where we called all the HIV AIDS activists, the pediatricians, the primary care workers. We even asked the World Health Organization to come with us. For the whole week, this issue was discussed. And the conclusion, yes, and UNICEF, United Nations Children's Fund, they featured very well. The conclusion is that breastfeeding is the best, nothing beats breastfeeding. Even for a woman who's HIV positive, nothing beats breastfeeding. You better put that woman on ARV cover and let them continue breastfeeding. Because we have discovered and research has shown it. If a woman avoids breastfeeding because she's HIV positive, that child is going to be killed by other things much more than HIV could have done. And it's showing that many children in South Africa will die of other things in avoiding HIV AIDS. So breastfeeding is the best. But I'm also sure you are aware, members, that you no longer see an advert of Lactogen or Nespray or Klim on the radio, I mean on the TV. You don't hear about it on the radio. You don't see posters. What happened to that? It has been abolished by the World Health Organization. The decision taken in the World Health Assembly by all ministers of health gathering in Geneva every year, that if we are to encourage breastfeeding among women because we are convinced that breastfeeding will save children, then stop this advert. And you are aware after the summit, we also said in South Africa, we are no longer going to provide free milk formula in clinics. You are aware that we have taken that decision. And people were saying we are saving money. We are not saving money, we are saving children. We are saving lives by doing so. Because we want the children to be breastfed. Maybe I must give you the other reason apart away from HIV/AIDS. Why breastfeeding saves children? All of us here have got immunity. Don't think the fact that you don't have pneumonia or TB or whatever, don't think it's because that germ or that dwaji is not flying around here. It is flying around, but your body is dealing with it. And that's why we immunize you. When you immunize you against measles, a child against measles, we don't mean that the measles virus won't get in. It will get into the child, but because of the vaccine, it will cause no disease. Now, all of us here have got immunity, whereby these germs enter our bodies, but because of immunity, we fight them, we don't even know that it came into our bodies. Now, people are not born with that immunity. You get it from your mother, from the breast. It is not there in the chin, no matter how much scientists can boast. This tin of cream or all that, you'll never find antibodies there. It's just cow's milk, only. Cow milk made for cows, for that matter, not for human beings. But we thought, yes, there's no antibody. So when a mother doesn't breastfeed the child, it's actually depriving that child of protection against diseases. You are depriving that child against antibodies. By the time the child grows to acquire their own antibodies, it might be too late. Those who die is too late, they'll never acquire them. Those who survive will acquire them, but very late. So we believe, in fact, to me, I suspect breastfeeding is actually a right, you know. Yes. I think it must be classified as a right. Because here is somebody who brought you into this world. They have got to protect you against diseases and feed you. Yes. But mothers suspect that children don't get satisfied or it's not yes. They always suspect so. And let me tell you the danger in South Africa. When mothers suspect so, they start breastfeeding, we agree. Then they suspect it's not enough. They concoct a formula and give the child. That one is even the worst. It's called misfeeding. It's the worst. Don't even do it. If you were to give the infant formula alone, which we hate, it's even better. If you do breastfeeding, that's the best. But if you can't do it, you give the breast the formula, we'll forgive you. But if you start mixing them, it's even more dangerous. Yes. And unfortunately, that's what the most South African women are doing. It's the most dangerous thing you can ever do, to mix the two. And let me explain to you why it's dangerous. Sorry? Even if you put legislation, they do it at home. Not everything can be legislated for you. You must just teach them and make, yeah. Let me tell you why it's dangerous. Whether we like it or not, even for those people who go on promoting infant feeding formulas, I've just made a statement that it's made for cows, not for children. So in the intestine of that child, it's going to cause some form of inflammation. Even if the child is not sick, there's going to be some form of inflammation. That means the surface of the intestine will flare up a little bit. Yes, at all times. If you then give that child the breast milk, which may likely be having that virus, it's going to enter very quickly, much quicker. Yes, that virus will enter into the child's mucosal membrane much quicker because the infant's formula has actually opened the way for it. It does open a way. So that's why women must not mix. Unfortunately, according to statistics, the majority, I think 25% of women in South Africa are doing exclusive breastfeeding. Only 25%, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry. Oh. Yeah, it's not as 8. The 25 I'm talking about is those who are doing only infant formula. The rest are doing mixed feeding, which is the most dangerous. And that's why we are losing so many babies. The rest. Only 8% are breastfeeding. It's the lowest ever. Are doing exclusive breastfeeding. If it was the other way around, we'll be saving lots and lots, millions of babies. What the South Africans think is that they can do all these things and there will be a hospital to save them. That's the mentality all over. Everything, they blame it on the hospital. Do all these wrong things, then doctors must fix something in the hospital. If they don't, we heap all the blame on them. No, doctors are not working. The hospital system is not working when we actually create these problems. And that is the mentality in our country, which is very unfortunate. Nobody will even talk about this. The number of children who appear in hospital because they've got diarrhea and they are sick because of lack of breastfeeding is very high. Training, essential steps in management of sexual emergencies, skills based attendance, including additional midwives. These are the steps in karma that are going to be taken. Priority newborn intervention, promotion of early and exclusive breastfeeding. We need to promote it. Somebody spoke about legislation. If you put that law, how is it going to help? Because the woman will just go into a bedroom and do whatever they want. Where will you be here? So it can't be helped by law. Promotion of early and exclusive breastfeeding. Exclusive means please don't feed this child anything else. I know I've asked many mothers because I once practiced. Exactly why I do this. But this child is always crying. Didn't get enough alcohol here. Yes, not the one woman. No. It's not enough. Then they say I'm insulting them when I ask them. It means we are worse than animals. You know? Yes, have you ever seen a cow which is born this week eating grass? No, they're all on milk. All of them. Cows, cattle, donkeys. They don't eat grass. They're all on milk until they are grown up. But human beings, before they knew anything, everything is mixed for, so we are actually more guilty than animals, or we are taking care of our children less than what animals are doing. And this is not supposed to be an insult, this is a reality. Because I'm asking you again, go and show me a cow that was born today that is on eating grass. It's not. It goes to the breast, to the milk of the mother, and it survives. No problems. Must bring the what?
My friend is, because through you, Chairperson, I'm laughing because I'm just thinking of my granny, because this is what she used to tell me.
That what?
With my first baby.
That what? Tell you what?
Give extra milk to the
baby.
Yes, not enough.
The funniest thing is this, especially in the African communities, they will tell you it's our culture. And it's wrong. Where was that culture before these breast milk formulas came into this world? They were doing nature. Nature, yes, exactly. So some of the things we call culture is not actually culture. They were brought by development, which we misunderstood. I am seeing Muslim communities burying people within 24 hours. Africans will tell you it's our culture, they wait for a month. There was no such a culture before. There were mortuaries and fridges. People used to bury here and there that night. That was the African culture. Yes, that's true. Where were all, before there were mortuaries and fridges and all these fancy cars, what do you think the African community were doing? But they would sit in a village and tell, no, we can't do it now. No, we must wait for a week. It's our culture. Yes, it happened because of migrant labor system. Relatives were not there, they still have to travel, but there are also fridges. Take away all the fridges. They'll start burying in 24 hours like we used to do long ago. Take away all the infant formula. They'll start giving breast milk and you are going to go and make noise. If you ask her, yes, when she was born, these things were not even there. But now she believes it's nature. It's not. Prevention of HIV infection through effective PMTC, I'm sure you know it. The suspension of newborns, postnatal visit within 6 days, which includes newborn care and helping mother to practice exclusive breastfeeding. You know, if we successfully as South Africa put up those ward-based primary health care, if we put them up, we are going to win this battle. Where they'll know which mother in my ward has delivered, has she gone back to hospital after 6 days? Is, you know, is she breastfeeding or is she believing what your Agogo is saying? Yes. And that primary health care worker will sit with your Agogo very nicely, not making noise, to bring her back to nature. Because yes, our Agogos have gone modern, you know. If the model is killing, yes. The neonatal survival strategy, we have got a few strategies there. Health system for mothers and babies. Contraception, including for post-miscarriage and postpartum, etc. What I didn't tell you about this lack of contraception is this. The confidential committee on maternal mortality, the triennial committees have shown you. They've actually argued with figures, because that's what they found out when they were studying this file, that 8% of pregnancies, sorry, no, let me put it correctly, that teenagers contribute to 8% of pregnancies. That means 8% of all the women who are pregnant in South Africa are teenagers. But when it comes to death, they contribute 36%. 36% of women who die because of pregnancy and childbirth are teenagers, showing that they contribute not much on pregnancy, but on death, they contribute a lot. Why? Because they are not ready to fall pregnant. They were not supposed to have fallen pregnant. Their bodies are not ready. And so the report actually says, go where this is happening. Stop it there. That's why our school health program is so important. Knowledge and skills of healthcare providers. This SMOE training is now happening in our hospital where we are training nurses and doctors on what to do when there are emergencies. And that is due to asphyxia. These are the programs that we are going to follow. That is due to prematurity. This issue of prematurity is a big problem in our country. Very big. And we usually experience it in January. What happens in January? Young people fall pregnant. In January, they discover or realize or remember Christmas is over. They remember that they must go to school now, and they are pregnant. Then they start looking at methods to remove that pregnancy. And many of them start doing abortion, which are very dangerous back streets. And they just come to the hospital to drop the baby who dies after 6 hours. It's a very big problem for us. And then you count, oh, in this hospital, so many babies died within 1 week, and it's headlines all over the papers. It's a big problem for us, big problem. But we know it happens mostly in January, not even by school children, even adults. They will tell you that, no, I was intending to fall pregnant, but I just found a job. And I realized I must terminate this pregnancy. And they do all sorts of things. Death due to infection, I'm sure you know problems of infection. And then we also want to take care of very small sick newborns. I mentioned kangaroo mother care, issues of asphyxia and infection control. And then this issue of promoting breastfeeding. I think I've already spoken about this, how it fell in the 1990s, how we call the breastfeeding summit, and this is what we are doing. We call it Swan Declaration of Breastfeeding. We don't mean it's happening in Swan. It's because the summit was held in Swan. Yes. This is where the summit was held. It was held at the St. George's Hotel in Swan. And the declaration that we came up with, we call it the Swan Declaration, that all these things must happen, including, yes, the others I've mentioned already. What I didn't mention is to you is this. We need to establish human milk banks. Everybody who has had an accident and bled on the road knows that they were saved with somebody's blood. That blood you get from the blood bank. There are blood banks all over the country. We ask you to donate blood all the time to take to the blood bank. It's exactly the same concept. We establish a breast milk bank. You ask all the lactating mothers, pregnant women, to express their milk and donate like they donate blood. We store it in the bank and we help babies who don't have mothers. If you want to see how effective, yes, I can see some people are very surprised, but they were not surprised when they are not surprised when they get somebody's blood which they don't know. Yes. When you are bleeding to death, either giving birth or after an accident, you are going to save with somebody's blood. Why not save babies with the milk of a mother they don't even know? They've never even met. Yes. If you want to see how effective a breast milk bank is, go to Kimberley Hospital in the Northern Cape. They've got one of the most advanced, and they are even supplying the surrounding hospitals and clinics with breast milk from mothers. They just express it, do whatever pasteurization. It's not a difficult process, by the way. It's not a lot of science. Very simple, basic science. Put it in bottles, put it in the fridge, and let it freeze. When the mother needs it, they just take it and they warm it, and they feed the baby. Finish. That's what we need to do. If you really think then you don't want to take ARVs and breastfeed, then you can go to the breast milk bank, get free milk there that has been donated. And we're asking women to be generous with their milk, please, to help save our babies. Yes. Prevention of mother-child transmission, I've already spoken about how the rate fell from 8% to 3.5 to 7. Our target is that if we implement new guidelines from April 2013, the target must be below 1%. And what are the new guidelines? These guidelines will start in April, next month. It means ARVs for all pregnant HIV women, regardless of the CD4 count, for the duration of the breastfeeding. That means every woman who is HIV positive, we don't care what their CD4 count is, as long as they are just positive, for the whole duration of breastfeeding, put them on ARVs. That's what we want to start next month. And that is just showing the gap in what is called important gap in care for mothers and children. The PSC outreach teams play an important role in postnatal care, especially with regards to supporting breastfeeding. Postnatal care is the care of the mother after birth. And we are talking about the gap because we are showing postnatal care mother visits within 6 days. It's very important for mothers after birth to visit within 6 days. Yes. And that's why the primary health care workers will also help us to identify and make sure that this improves. And then prevention of promoted services, the road to health. Package of early childhood development intervention, better nutrition, highlighted in early childhood development, diagnostic review, immunizations with vaccines, etc. I've already mentioned that. Other child health services, correct management of common childhood illnesses at primary health care facilities, meaning at the clinic level, can we train the sisters, the nursing sisters, the nurses very well to do their best at clinic level? Improved hospital care for ill children, especially for those with common conditions like pneumonia, diarrhea, and severe malnutrition. Expansion and strengthening of school health services. I've already spoken about this. We are going to expand it, especially we are strengthening it more at the beginning in the NHI pilot district. Developing services for children with long-term health conditions. Management of common illnesses. We need to draw guidelines on common illnesses like this. Provision for prevention and services, screening for TB, early identification of HIV-infected children, initiation of ART where indicated. Care in hospitals, let me not bore you with that. I've already spoken to you about the specialist teams, how they are going to help us with guidelines, protocols, etc., etc. And this, at the time, however, interventions continue. The hospital CEOs, You are aware that we have just appointed new CEOs in hospitals. Many of them believe this has got nothing to do with them. We have given them these steps during their training, that they need to ensure that norms and standards are adhered to in treating people and drugs. They need to ensure that SOPs in place for all aspects of service delivery. Can you explain the word SOPs? One or two of them? Yes. Yes, we love abbreviations. So, yeah. Standard, yes, because these procedures, let me tell you what's happened in South Africa over the years. Every time we believe we are getting sophisticated, we drop up normal things. In the olden days, because of an acute shortage of doctors, will come up with guidelines, standard operating procedures, put them in all clinics. They will even guide nurses what to do when there's no doctor. Now people believe, now we have got specialists and doctors, we don't need these things. We simply want to go back to them and say in this clinic, these are the standard operating procedures, these are the guidelines, these are the protocols, please follow them. Then you will save babies. Review indicators like the dashboard of maternal and child health, monthly and act. In other words, the superintendent the CEO must have a dashboard there and say, oh, mother and child health, this is my dashboard. If they see that if anything is getting out of control, they start actually acting. The strengthening of the school health system. I'm not going to read all these things for you, because I've already said them, including the 8% pregnancies and 36% mortality, I've mentioned them. I just want to talk about the school health system, why we have launched it. We believe the school health system must do five things at schools. Five things for our children. Number one, every child going to school for the first time must have their eyes tested, their ears, oral hygiene. That's the first program. The second one is that one of immunization. Is it possible for our school health system to make sure that from crèche right up to matric, children are immunized for all the diseases for which vaccines exist? Can we do that at school rather than sporadically? Can it be known at school that it's even the job of teachers? I nearly said cheaters. Teachers. Can we make sure that they follow up this? This immunization program. The third, drugs and alcohol in schools. The Western Cape meeting as of yesterday, Northern Cape and Western Cape, have got the biggest problem there. The fourth is reproductive health rights, which you like debating academically about. Yes, reproductive health and rights for children. I don't know why you are reporting this much about then on making noise that no, these kids are still at school. Then come and complain when the Minister of Finance is reading a lot of money of people who depend on child support grants. Most of them are girls who are supposed to be at school. If a girl is 15 years and she falls pregnant and she delivers a baby, should we close our eyes and wait for the next pregnancy? She's going to fall pregnant again. That girl is ready for family planning, whether you like it or not. She has already done it once. She's a mother. Yes, she needs family planning. Otherwise, she's simply going to do it again. I visited a clinic in Mkanyebude district in the far, far forbidden place of KZN. The nurse told me there, she said, Minister, please help us. Most of the girls who fall pregnant come to us because they say, sister, I don't want it to happen to me again. Can you help me? And she said, if there are no family planning facilities, we don't know what to do. But they do tell us that, please, I don't want it to happen to me again. Because most of the girls start realizing after it happened that it's not a nice thing. And they want it not to happen again, but we allow it to happen. This belief that girls are falling pregnant because they are targeting child support grant, it has got no basis. It's extremely unscientific. It's not true. Because even some senior people believed it. The Minister of Social Development was forced to do a research. And that research has shown that this is not true. It has shown that most of the child support grant, they start claiming it 2 years after the child has been born. If the girl fell pregnant because she wants child support grant, believe you me, the day she delivers, the following day, she'll be queen there to register the baby. Why wait for 2 years if you wanted money? they are falling pregnant because of many social problems, lack of family planning, etc. That's why the school health program must come and look into that. And the European Union has helped us. In the NHI pilot project, as part of piloting of NHI, they've bought vehicles for us. We've got 30 of them now in the 10 districts. We are busy acquiring more by June. We'll be having 90. The vehicles look like this. This is the NHI pilot project vehicle, school health. This is the back of it. On the side is written the package of services, which it must provide at school, this truck. Health and education information, health screening for learners, immunization, growth monitoring, hearing screening, vitamin A supplementation and deworming, screening for TB, family planning, which I know you are going to fight me about and say, Minister, just remove that one. Yes, I know people like saying that. Medical male circumcision, HIV testing and counseling, which people are also fighting us about, screening and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases. The reason that this is important, our research has shown convincingly that if sexually transmitted diseases are not treated early, HIV AIDS infection flourishes. It's easy for people with STDs to get HIV AIDS. Treatment for minor ailments. This is what the school health program will do in all the areas where it exists. And this is the primary health care vehicle. This. And this is the inside of that big vehicle. You can do a lot of procedures there. You can insert what you call a loop intrauterine device. You can perform a circumcision. You can suture if the child has got a minor cut at school. Lots of things can happen there in that small theater. That is a fridge there, which is full of vaccines. You can vaccinate all the kids at school who are not vaccinated. That is the first vehicle. What am I doing? Yes. This is the eye care vehicle. It's the smallest of them all. That big one will do all these things, primary health care. This is for eye care. This is inside the eye care vehicle. Let me tell you, these vehicles are not only for kids. If you are at home, if we park this vehicle in any rural village, you can line up all the goggles there, we'll test their eyes. We can even, not only goggles, even you, we can give you a prescription. That machine can give you a prescription for your spectacles at school. So that if we don't have the spectacles to give you, we'll tell you to go to your doctor with that prescription. They will know, to our optometrist, they will know what to do. That's why this is the smallest vehicle, but it costs more than 1 billion rand, because this is the most expensive equipment. Here, somewhere here, which is not shown on the picture, coming towards me, there's a machine which we use to measure. Let's put it in English. Glaucoma. The pressure in the high blood pressure of the eyes, if I put it that way. Doctors will kill me if they can hear me say so. People know blood pressure. You don't also know that the eye has also got blood a pressure, which is called glaucoma. It causes blindness in many people. Many people go blind because they had glaucoma, they didn't know. That means the pressure in the eye was too high, pressing against the retina and destroying it. That instrument over here can measure that glaucoma. Even for you, you can go and measure yourself. So during school hours, these vehicles will move around the villages. They are not only there for school kids. This is This is a dental clinic now, the dental care. The biggest one I showed is primary health care. The smallest one is for eye care. The medium one is for dental care. In many African areas, you only go to a dentist when there's a hole. I'm sure you know that. If there's no hole, no dentist. And that is a big problem. So with this vehicle, this is the inside of the vehicle. It has got a dentist chair. We don't only pull out teeth there or clean them or fill up holes. We can also, what is called that, spray. Yes, you can actually seal them so that they don't develop holes. We can seal them for these children who are at risk. There's an X-ray machine there. So we can even x-ray your mouth and tell you what's inside. And there is the dark room where the x-ray is processed. So before you move out of this, we'll have taken an x-ray, processed it, put it on the wall, and show you what is in your mouth. This is our monitoring and evaluation. Child mortality rate, both institutional and community, we need to monitor them. In other words, in each and every hospital, we need to know the mortalities, and in the community. Routine data collected through the District Health Information System and the CAMA dashboard. Our conclusion, child mortality rates are falling. Further strengthening of service at community, PHC and hospital levels will result in a further decline. This provides an opportunity to focus on ensuring optimal nutrition and development of children. Neonate mortality rates are static and interventions to improve newborn care are being implemented. I'm sure people will say we are exaggerating when we say child mortality rates are falling because they see anecdotes in the newspapers where 6 children die in one day and all that. Yes, those bring outrage because it shows carelessness, but the overall mortality as caused by these things, the socioeconomic conditions that they've shown you, that overall mortality is coming down. All we need is to accelerate. And that's why we are so proud of that. That's why we want to increase the number of these school health vehicles from 60 to 90 and then from there take them. These 60 and 90 will only be in the 10 districts. The other districts we are still planning as we implement NHI more and more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. You know, I was worried when we have to have a meeting at 2 o'clock after lunch. But I realized that with your vibrant and comprehensive presentation, everybody was just alive and listening. Thank you very much for that. Honorable members, we have children who are career women who will tell you that they don't have time to breastfeed. That's a problem, but the challenge that we have today, as expressed here today by the minister, breastfeeding is the best. That's the lesson that we should take home. I'm going to allow honorable members to interact with the presentation. From that side, I'm sorry that I'm seated, can see Honorable Plaiti. Oh, did you see the hand of Mr. Plaiti behind you? Okay. Honorable Mnube, Honorable Plaiti. As you go that way, okay.
Now, the first one is on the...
is on the campaign maybe for less breastfeeding mothers in South Africa.
Campaign.
Yeah.
Campaign.
Exactly. Yeah. To say is it in place? Because even those that are not career women, young women don't want to breastfeed. And I remember also when I got a child, it's difficult. Yeah, so the question is the campaign there, and how broad should we do it, over and above the PCOs, how broad? The churches, the traditional leaders, etc. The other one is on the malnutrition as one factor that contributes towards child mortality. To say also the question of even if you're poor, you can have nutritious food. Only if there is an education in terms of buying this food or eating this food will amount to malnutrition. I mean, one grew up in Soweto who eats white bread, who used to love white bread. Even now, children, young children, they love white bread. and it doesn't have those all the nutrients. We'll eat maguina, shan horse, and other things, and tea. So also the question of education on the malnutrition, to say what type of food that we have to eat, even if we're not pregnant, because we're not pregnant, but we'll end up falling pregnant. So we have to change the diet after that. Thanks.
Yeah. Mine is on the... I just want to find out, just a clarity, DG and Minister, that since we, or since the signing of the, what do you call it, MDG declaration in 1990.
Yes, the MDGs were declared by United Nations in 2000.
In 2000.
You remember that meeting, Tony Blair, leave my Zimbabwe. That is the day on which the meeting in which they came up with this MDG. So it was in 2000.
So I just want to find out now about maybe the estimated statistics on the decrease of child mortality, you know, between that period and now. Maybe we should also explain to me in terms of separating the stats on child mortality and the termination of pregnancy, where people will go and terminate pregnancy and then it's part of killing the children. How high is it in terms of stats compared to the ordinary child mortality rate in our country? Then I wanted to stay there, DG, on the stage. I am not sure whether. I want to ask how reliable is the statistics, whether we physically count them in the hospital or we quantify them in terms of the average percentage. I just want to find out how do you do it to make sure that the stats that you're presenting to us, in fact, it's exact, almost correct as to what is happening down there in terms of child mortality. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think really I do have a question, but it's just that I just want to bring something here that maybe one should appreciate that health, more especially after we took over, it was one of the departments that everybody was complaining about it. But the reality is that where there is progress, we should really be in a position to indicate. I think as one from the Northwest, I just want, particularly on the issue where the minister indicated that in the public hospitals where you find all the facilities, you know, your specialists and all that, I remember we know Tepo, Topham Hospital is in Klerksdorp. Whenever we were referred to Klerksdorp, it was referred that you go there, you are going to die. But I must indicate that from what is happening now, even when you ask people, they will say Tepo is one of the best hospitals, that when you go to a hospital, you get your specialist, you know, you get everybody there. And some will say, I don't even feel like going to the private hospital. This is a reality. This is what is happening in my area. Also, Chairperson, I just want to say the reality is that the minister, when made his input, he reminded me of my granny. And I think it's something that really we have to work on it, you know, campaigns, you know, teaching our people around this thing. There are two issues that really reminded me of. The first one, maybe the department will just clarify, the kangaroo mother care, I know. Why don't we have the kangaroo father care? Maybe I should indicate why I'm saying that. Maybe I should say why I'm saying that. I once listened to a very interesting interview where this father was saying that I've saved my child, and he was admitted in a Bophelong hospital. He was, you know, this kangaroo care, but this was the father. And when they interviewed him, he was very proud that kid went through that process, the child is alive, he's happy because the mother passed on. So I just want to say, why don't we also include fathers? Because I was really impressed by that, and really they broadcast it in Motsweding because they wanted people to know about these processes. Lastly, the issue where I say again, you reminded me of my granny, is that when I grew, I remember I've got an aunt. The baby was very small, and the baby was put in a shoebox covered with cotton wool and all that. But it's just a big, maybe it's something that also goes to the kangaroo, but I don't know the shoebox, what do we call that? Thank you.
Thanks, and thank you for the presentation, Honorable Minister. It was really eye-opening. Honorable Minister, I think now I'm just going to raise a few concerns rather than questions. My first concern is what we usually are concerned about as the health department and people at large. It's the attitude of our staff members in all our clinics, especially in rural areas. We still have got nurses, when they see a young woman or a young girl having scratch marks on the body, and they humiliate that person, that child. I think we need, I don't know what are we going to do, because that happens also in a room where there is no legislation for that attitude. You see? And also in our campaign, Honorable Minister, I also want us to emphasize on the fact that we don't need to wait for our children to fall pregnant before we take them for contraceptives or for family planning. For example, I've got a 17-year-old girl. She started on contraceptives at the age of 15 years. She had no, in fact, I thought she had no boyfriend on that at that age, you see. But she's 17 now. But she started, I took her to the clinic to start contraceptive when I realized that she's driving, number one. And there are lots of, and she's tall, and there are lots of men around her. So I thought of taking her to do, I'm not sure how much damage did I do to that, but I did that. From the age of 15 years, she is now 17 years, she's still on contraceptives. In the ministerial committees, Honorable Minister, you said that this ministerial committee is giving reports. I'm not sure, are we allowed to get their findings, or is it very confidential for us to get those findings of them in these areas where they work on? I also want to know the impact that when a woman is giving birth, I've tried to make a cylinder up years. Maybe a woman has got her first child in March 2012, then December 2013, the second child, and then September 2014, she will have a third child. What impact does this spacing have in child mortality and all these diseases that the children usually get? I think,
Yes, no, thank you very much. I must first start by commenting that the department from moving from a curing system and going to a preventative one, that shows proactivity, and that's one thing that we really have to applaud to. But even having said that, with the NHI pilot systems and the buses that were shown here, I've got some reservations in terms of presently, when you visit hospitals, when you visit clinics, there is always a problem of staff shortages, especially when it comes to professional nurses. Now, I'm not sure how the department is going to make it possible for the skills that are needed, for instance, the eye people, the dentists that will be doing this work. As of present, in what we have, we don't have these special people in those. Even the professional nurses themselves, there is a serious shortage thereof. The other thing, I'm very happy with, you know, the actually today we have been educated. It's a lecture that we got here. Some of the things we took for granted, we are mothers, I'm already a grandmother, but I didn't know that you mixing formula with breastfeeding is even more dangerous, because that's what we do. When they go back to work or to school, you now rely on the formula. But now I think the most important people to be telling the mothers to be this are those nurses when they go for their antenatal treatments in the clinics and all that. Again, you find that there is a long queue, and there's no time to explain to the patients, I don't know, you don't call them patients, to the mothers to be on this important fact that you are given today. So if we are to make sure that we win this battle, education of these mothers to be is very important. And how are we going to succeed in doing that with all the challenges that we have of there's many people without the people to assist them? Minister, I know about waiting homes. I grew up in Grootegeluk Hospital. We used to see those people. They were staying there 3 months before. And I think if that can be done, waiting, you say maternity waiting home. I grew up, we knew that there was an area where they stayed. And probably that would assist even in this training of these mothers-to-be. The other thing that you talked about is the CEO roles. Now, there are roles that you have talked about there. Do we have timelines? Because if we have to go, for instance, as this committee and check and find out that these things are not practicable in those health establishments, we need to know whether they are now functional after they have been appointed, or do we have to give them time to make sure that those things are available and are done? Do we have to be patient and say, no, it will be done? Like when you were talking about trucks, you said, no, we'll start a little bit and then it will spread. My other plea is that let it start in the most rural areas where people cannot access the facilities. That is where it has to start. The last one that I want to talk about is this obstetric ambulances. You said one per district. What criteria do you use for this type of an ambulance to be allocated to a particular facility? Where do you put them in those districts? Do you use a particular criteria, or do they have to move from one area to the other? Let me stop there for a while. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'm sure if the others come, but I'm worried about time.
Yeah.
Now, yes. I'm going to try and pick up the team here will answer those which I'm not able to. You OK? Okay, the breastfeeding campaign, maybe let's start there. How widespread is it out there? Can you answer that for us?
Thanks, Mr. and honorable members. We have a communications campaign around the Tswana Declaration. So it started there. And it's largely at community radio level and community level. There have been also adverts on national radio that have been put in place. But clearly, you know, with communications, you can't ever do enough. So clearly, we need to do more. We're also trying to do it in the workplace to encourage employers to provide space for mothers to breastfeed their kids in the workplace. So we are doing a fair bit on communication, but clearly we'd like to do more. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much, honorable members. And Minister, I just wanted to say that Save the Children has just released a report on the 18th of February, where they were acknowledging countries that have done substantially significant changes and introduced comprehensive legislation. In South Africa is one of the 11 countries out of 193 that have comprehensive legislation, particularly on breastfeeding. And in this report, Save the Children states that annually, when women breastfeed, we can actually save 830,000 lives per annum. So it's a very globally, annually. So the more countries encourage breastfeeding, the more lives will be saved. So it's, I think honorable members must access that report.
The third quality mortality is 1990, and how right is the issue of child mortality to detect pregnancy, and how whether the tests are reliable. These are very, very tricky and difficult questions. Let me start with the reliability of tests. The MDGs were declared in the year 2000. In 2010, it was 10 years after the declaration of every country was required to go to
United Nations. Every country was required to go to United Nations to report. And when we developed the report here, to be accurate as a country, we don't fit in a corner as a Department of Health. There's a special team which is headed by State South Africa. The statistician general, that person who counts us, is the one who was heading that team. Yes, the yellow man. In that team, you'll find health, social development, home affairs, universities, and all that. They all sit there. One of their conclusions in 2010 was that South Africa doesn't have reliable statistics. When we, before we went to United Nations, so the figure we took to United Nations was very high, was much higher than it's supposed to, because we thought if our statistics are not reliable, the country takes a lower figure. We're going to be in big trouble. If eventually it's found that it's much higher, they'll believe we're hiding and lying. Because, for instance, maternal mortality was estimated at between 200 to 600, 100,000 deaths. Now, the gap between two, if I ask you how many mothers die in South Africa every year, you say it's between 200 to 600, 100,000, you know? So we end up taking the middle one of 400. And the state of South Africa, when we took the report to cabinet before it was released to United Nations, the statistician general made the recommendation to cabinet. Since then, the DG put together a team called HADAC. AIDS Health Advisory Committee. Health Data Advisory Committee, Health Data Advisory Committee, HDAC. That team consists of every possible person you need to count these things. Medical Research Council, the universities, especially Cape Town, Vets, and University of Natal, Home Affairs, State South Africa, ourselves. We even included experts from UNICEF and World Health Organization. They sent for over a year going through these things. You ask about formula. There are scientific formulas which people can argue about. I forgot the Actuarial Society. The Actuarial Society, South Africa, especially at UCT. All those came together, and they are the ones who came with these figures. The reason that we are showing you this is because of the work of that committee. And we believe we are the only country in the whole continent that can show such accurate statistics. That is why, because of this, the question you ask about that is very important. In the last AU meeting in Addis Ababa, the newly appointed chairperson of the African Commission, who you know was our Minister of Health, Dr. Nkosana Dlamini-Zuma, because she knew about this, she declared there that every year AU start new things and start saying no, declaring new things. She said the time of declaration is over. She's going to concentrate on four things. And the first one is this issue of numbers, figures, stats in Africa. Stats, how many people were this, how many people were that, how many people were yes. Yes, now DG is showing me the people who were in that group, the Health Data Advisory Committee, UNICEF, United Nations Population Development, World Health Organization, World Bank, and ourselves here. So we believe the studies we are using is accepted largely by all these international organizations. How rife is child mortality due to teenage pregnancy? It's very difficult. That study is, I don't know whether we have got figures from the mortality that this child died because the mother was below age, but we know if 8% of pregnancies occur to teenagers, but 36% of maternal death is teenagers, it's clear that this is a very high percentage. And why is there a relationship? If maternal mortality is very high, child mortality will also rise because children depend mostly on their mothers. We had the only one story of father care, kangaroo father care. It's usually mothers. When your mother passes away before, I mean when you are born, your chance of survival will decrease accordingly. I'm sure you know that. Yes, so all these teenagers who die in pregnancy and childbirth or after childbirth, the teenagers will automatically also not survive. The chance of survival are very slim because they remain with their grandmothers and all those other sorts of problems. The issue of sleeping hospital is usually nice to hear this nice story, which people don't usually believe. They believe everything is negative. They don't know about this nice story. The issue of kangaroo father care, I must confess I never heard about it. But I think it's very important if the mother is not there, but if he's there, she's the real, the first person who must do that because of bonding and all that. Fathers don't have breast milk, unfortunately. Mothers we have got, just children, yes. The issue of attitude of staff, I think it's a very important issue of race. About the attitude of staff, the act we have just passed, which has just gone through the NCOB, to establish Office of Health Standard Compliance. You remember we said we are going to choose inspectors who will inspect mostly on 16 cleanliness, attitude of staff, infection control, waiting times, etc., etc. So at the moment we have got what you call facility improvement teams who have got the results of this audit for each and every hospital. They've been visiting them to make improvements. Some of the improvements are there on the issue of attitude of staff. It's going to be one of the biggest problems. When we train the CEOs, this is what I told them, the CEOs who went for training. I told them, as far as I'm concerned, if the attitude of staff is not good in any institution, it's a reflection on the leadership of the CEO. And we told them specifically that they must go and look into this issue because most hospitals don't pass on that particular one. You are 15-year-old and yes. Whether you cause any damage, according to me, you save that child. You save that child and continue saving them. There's absolutely no damage you have caused. What society is refusing to accept continuously is that things have changed. They will tell you that this child is very young. Most probably I would have said that 8 years ago, and I would have been right. Because 30 years ago, girls used to menstruate at the age of 17, 16, yes, up to 18. That's why when we're taught dying, if any girl comes and says she's not falling pregnant, and she's below the age of 18, in terms of protocol, you can't investigate. In other words, if you are a gynecologist, somebody less than 18 years come and say, no, I've been trying to fall pregnant, I'm not. You don't investigate, you regard them as a child, that your time is still coming. That has changed. Menstruation now starts at 9 years. Yes. It used to start at 16, 17, 18. They start menstruating at 9. Meaning at that age, they can fall pregnant. Has God started creating new people? No. It's modern times again. The food we eat, it brings precocious puberty, such that young girls start menstruating at 9. That is not going to be easily reversed. It's the way, what the world has, the era in which the world has entered. So to keep on living like you are 50 years ago, it doesn't help us. When I listen to people, they are putting us there, especially adults, because it's very comfortable for you. It's even comfortable for me, I must tell you, because we all have daughters. Yes. It's all comfortable for me to say my daughter is still young. She's less than 16. But if you know reality, so you did well. And please keep it up. I'll support you at all times. And I know the parents who are fighting us are just refusing to accept. Yes, whether the findings of ministerial committee are secret, they are not. We release those findings. Every time the report is there, what the confidential committee, on maternal mortality, for instance, is chaired by Professor Jake Moodley, a retired gynecology professor. What he does, he will call all the people who are dealing with this in every province, bring them together and release the results and the way forward. So they are not, why we call it confidential? The only reason we call it confidential is they study the files of dead people. They can't go and say, no. Your mother died 3 years ago, and this is our findings about that particular person. It will cause war. You understand what I mean? But in terms of statistics and all that, because this is not an investigation, it's not a court of law. They are inquiring to see where the country must go. You can't bring your results and say, oh, you see what happened. The clinic was closed when your mother arrived that day. That's why, you know. So it's called confidential in that fashion. It's not supposed to be used in that way. It's supposed to help the country move forward. That, if you, people want to know and all that, they use other means, as you know. If you believe your doctor was careless, you go to the health professions council if you think it's the nurse. But the committee, because otherwise, then they won't have access to these files if they were to use them as some form of. The spacing of children is well established scientifically. That's one of the reasons why there must be family planning. If children are not well spaced, their survival rate decreases accordingly. You have got to space them. And yes. And then you'll ask me, why in the past before there was this family planning? Was there a problem? Was there no problem? Problems always occur with modernity. In the past, children were spaced because they were being breastfed. Because there was no milk formula, mothers were forced to breastfeed. As long as you breastfeed, by the way, I forgot to mention that breastfeeding is also family planning. A woman with breastfeeding is not likely to fall pregnant very soon. Because 6 weeks after delivery or abortion, you can fall pregnant, especially if you are not breastfeeding. So part of the reason why school girls are vulnerable is because most of them deliver, leave the baby at home with the grandmother and run to school and not even breastfeed. They are ready to fall pregnant in 6 weeks, believe you me. And they are going to do so if there's no family planning. Because there's no breastfeeding also. So they are deprived of everything. Natural method, modern method, they are in no man's land. So spacing is very important. Even for married mothers, by the way. Even for married mothers. The issue of staff shortages, we know about it. I've mentioned it many times, and I don't think you must get skeptical about it. Sub-Saharan Africa has got a shortage of health workers. The World Health Organization declares the whole Sub-Saharan Africa a critical area, critical region in terms of staff shortage. But we are doing something to help. And we can't rely on nurses and doctors only. I've already told you about primary health care workers. That work must be done by them. How did we win the battle against HIV, turn the corner? Before February 2010, we're relying on doctors to start to initiate ARVs. We're relying on doctors only. But since then, and the nurses who were allowed, even CDKs to provide ARVs, were only 250 in the whole of South Africa. But we started training them. Today, there are 10,000. There are 10,000 nurses who can do what you call NIRMAT, nurse-initiated ARV treatment. And they are doing as well as doctors. If you kept on relying on doctors, we wouldn't have covered so many people. So if you rely on nurses equally, you won't be able to deal with your problems. That's why you need primary health care workers in the communities. That's why they need to be trained. We are faced with these modern problems. In the next coming weeks, DASA, the Dental Association of South Africa, is taking us to court because they don't want us to professionalize dental assistants, oral hygienists, and dental therapists. We are not going to get dentists all over. They want us to train dentists only because they are dentists. They don't want anybody. In the school health, where am I going to get a dentist from to do that? Yes, you need oral hygienists. You need dental therapists. Yes, you need people who are trained at the lower level to run with these trucks. You're not going to get a doctor who is trained as a dentist. So we need to do that. But we are aware that the reason that we sent 1,000 medical students to Cuba was specifically to deal with this. And the issue of nursing colleges reopening to train more nurses is because we want to deal with this issue of staff shortages. But I want you to know it's a global problem west in sub-Saharan Africa. Maternity waiting homes. What was the question about maternity? You were just mentioning that they were there, yes. We definitely want to do them. And the role of CEOs and whether we give them enough time. All the CEOs who were newly appointed, DG is just showing me that we are launching a nursing strategy next week, actually, because we've been working on it after the nursing summit. Yes, I forgot about it. When the CEOs took with the 101 first group of CEOs, the 101 of them, when they went for training, part of the training was each one of them must develop a program for the first 100 days. What do you do in the hospital in the first 100 days when you arrive? That's part of what they did in that training. So when they arrive in the hospital, they know that in these 100 days, this is what I must achieve. So if you want to visit them, you can check after 100 days whether they've done anything, because they really went through that program, and we are hoping they are implementing. A few cases of what I've heard is that there are changes where some of them went for that training, because they are not just entering the hospital, close their eyes. They've got the program.
Yeah.
They know what they must achieve in that first 100 days. The school health vehicles, the recommendation that they must go to the poorest areas. Colleagues, honorable members, remember that any program you start, you can't just start big. It will be very dangerous. Firstly, you won't have resources to start big. That's why we said NHI will take us 14 years. It's because of that. Yes, it's 14 years. If you check the National Planning Commission, they even argue that we are ambitious. They believe implementing the whole NHI will take 25 years. That's what the National Planning Commission said. Because it's a huge thing. So you start small, but the second problem, apart from resources, is that if you start big and there are mistakes, it's going to be difficult to reverse them. Whereas if you start small, that's why we pilot. You learn all the problems there before you modify. So even with the school health, where did we start? We started in the 10 pilot district with these tracks, but we did not go to rich schools. You are aware that schools in South Africa are divided into 5 quintals. Quintal 1 and 2 are the poorest. Quintal 4, 5 and 4 are the richest. 3 is in the middle. At the moment, we started with quintal 1 and 2 schools only. The principals are meeting, and I'm seeing, and I'll be in Umajuba district tomorrow to introduce these tracks to the principals there. I'm only calling principals from quintal 1 and 2 schools. Those from quintal 3 and 4 have already complained bitterly. But you have to have a starting point somewhere and move that way. So we are targeting the poorest of the poor because these are free services. Don't wonder how many have we done up so far. The school health. School kids, yes.
How many?
Our reports up from quarter one to quarter three, it's 77,000 children in grade one and grade R.
What is quarter one and three?
Quarter three. Between October, November, December.
In October, November, December, we covered
77,000.
Because the president launched in September, remember? And so we covered 77,000 children in quintal one and two schools, starting with grade one. And we keep on building. We are still a little bit far off from arriving at matric because we're starting at the bottom. And I believe we have done well to reach 77,000 in October, November, December. That is during the last month in which schools are not functioning very well. So I'm sure now that the schools have restarted and the teams are moving and the tracks are going to increase. But definitely we are targeting poor areas. Yes.
Is that all from the DG? Anything before we close?
Just to say that honourable members, the team has done outstanding work. I just wanted to say that perhaps what we need to continue doing is the communication, like you said, education of mothers.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's probably one area that we'll focus on. We have as part of the strategy, a proposal to have a workplace programs that are friendly to breastfeeding women. We if you come to the department, we actually have a special place for women to go there and express milk. It's a very nice area. If you want to visit us, we can show you. So we'd like to promote those practices in the workplace. In other countries, the fathers actually push babies to the workplace to allow mothers to proceed. In South Africa, I think it will take us a while.
Yes. Some of these things we ignore. How did we in this country end up having 4 months paid maternity leave? We do have.
Yes.
The 4 months paid maternity leave, why 4 months?
Bonding.
Yes, because it's not a labor issue, it was a child rights issue. Yes, because scientists said if the child spends at least 4 months with the mother, and that's why we had to change the labor law. But now scientists are recommending 6 months, isn't it? I don't know whether... Yes, I don't know whether industry will agree. This is a war between development and survival. Yes, but I'm just trying to tell you that some of these things are informed by that. Because before that, there was no paid maternity leave. It was never a right. It became a right because organizations like UNICEF, World Organization, fought. They fought very big battles that were losing lots of children because mothers deliver and go back to work immediately. And then they forced the International Labor Organization agreed and the RAND campaign forcing employers to give 4 months paid maternity leave. As to whether we'll win the 6 months, I don't know yet, because we haven't started. But because now they are saying at least, this exclusive breastfeeding, they say if you do it for at least 6 months, exclusively. So it's nothing. Exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months. Then from there you can do the other things. So when we say mix, we are worried about the first 6 months, not thereafter. Just 6 months, if you stay like that, you will be on course. Because after 6 months, then you can go to the other foodstuffs if you are HIV positive.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we have gone long past our time. And I really want to thank the department, the minister for bringing himself here to this committee. We really acknowledge that and that we are happy about it. DG, you are always with us. Whenever we have problems or any queries, you are a phone call away, and we really appreciate that with your department. Honorable members, I was told or I saw on the screen that we have a new content advisor. Is she here? Okay. Mkululi, if you can just allow her to... introduce herself before we close. I'm very sorry. I saw it on the screen and I realized you might be in this meeting today.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Tabile Keke. I'm the newly appointed Content Advisor for the committee. Okay.
You are very much welcome to this committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Time is gone.
Sorry, would you mind writing down your name for me?
I'm with the parliamentary monitoring group, and since you were just introduced, I'd like to mention it in the report. Would that be okay?
Usually
you don't, but I'm making an exception. You can write it on the back if you'd like. I just want you to get your shout out online. Thank you. That's fine.
Thank you.